Recording started.
We just slipped into a parallel universe there, I think.
Yeah. This is the 9/11 Truth, another Deep State teleconference, another Deep State Crimes teleconference for the 30th of November 2016. Ken Freeland and Cheryl Curtis are facilitating. Craig McKee is our secretary, and we will proceed with the previous minutes, approving the previous minutes. Is there any objection to approving the previous minutes as circulated by Craig?
Are we going to do a roll call?
No, we're not. Oh. We have
Can we run through the list so that we all know who's here?
Yes, we can do that. We will do that. Cheryl, or you can do that as soon as I get done here. Is there anybody, any objection to the approving the minutes as circulated by Craig? Hearing none, then the minutes are approved. Go ahead, Cheryl, you want to run through and let everybody know who's here?
Okay, so Barbara Honegger, myself, Cheryl Curtis, Craig McKee, Dan Hennen, David Cole. Is it Sherry Delaney?
No, it's Ned Delaney.
Oh, Ned. Okay, Ned Delaney. Okay. Dwayne Dietz, James Hufford, Jeremy Roth Cushell, Ed Jewett, Ken Freeland, Kevin Barrett, Michael Cook, Robert Milligan, Jane Milliken, and are you the Boston group, Jane?
Yes.
Is that where there's nine of you? Okay, great. John O'Malley, Pablo Novi, Roger Voorhees, Sheila Casey, Tony Hall, and I forgot who the was. Oh, that was Lucy Morgan Edwards, Wayne Costi, and Sandra Arena.
Anita Renfrew.
Anita, you're not showing up on here either. Okay. And then we have Kat. Okay. Kat McGuire.
Thank you.
This is Mike Cook with a special announcement.
Oh, Mike, we discuss announcements at the end of the call, but we do have a special place for them, okay?
It's my birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
I know we all want to socialize, but the problem is that Professor Hall has limited time tonight, and we have a very important item on the agenda, including him, so we want to get started with that right away.
Okay,
so,
boss. Okay.
We're going to go into lecture mode. And then we're going to open up the mics for Tony Hall. Somebody want to do that real quick? I can't find him. Okay, so there he is. Okay, so Tony Hall's mic's open. And here to introduce. Okay, so our first item on the agenda tonight will be a two-part presentation. In the first part, we have several speakers who are victims of different forms of censorship, academic repression, and then we will have an open discussion. After each speaker, we will give a brief opportunity for clarifying questions only, but save please all comments and further discussion for the open discussion, which we will have after the third speaker. So here to introduce our first of our speakers tonight is his compatriot, Craig McKee. Go ahead, Craig.
thank you. Yes, Anthony Hall is a tenured professor of liberal education and globalization studies at the University of Lethbridge in Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada, where he has taught for 26 years. He was recently suspended without pay from his position, which is what he's going to be telling us about shortly. Anthony's co-host the podcast False Flag Weekly News with Kevin Barrett, and is editor-in-chief of the website American Herald Tribune. He's also the author of two widely praised volumes, The American Empire and the Fourth World, and Earth into Property, Colonization, Decolonization, and Capitalism. So welcome, Tony.
Hi, Craig.
Hi.
Yeah.
So over to you.
Oh, all just over to me. Okay, well, I guess I could label myself as a suspended, a full professor, full tenured professor. of globalization studies and liberal education. And obviously tenure, the institution of tenure is to protect senior faculty members or members who go through the process. You know, it's not an easy matter to get a tenure-track job and then to get tenure. And the idea is that tenure is to protect professors whose work may involve creating problems for people in authority, for those who exercise power at the highest level. And I think I'm running into a very distinct attack, essentially emanating from the government of Israel through something called the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, involving Facebook as a corporate entity, involving my university, University of Lethbridge, the president, Dr. Michael Mann, and also involving the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, Now Magazine. I've been subjected to a very concerted media attack based largely on a planted, I could call it a false flag, Facebook post, a post that I did not author, I did not sanction, that was somehow put on my Facebook page for a brief period of time, a really horrific post with a very shocking image, and a text that I think could have well been written by a lawyer seeking to create the evidentiary basis for a hate speech trial. And I have been investigated for hate speech and incitement of genocide based on this Facebook post, which was put on my Facebook page for a brief period at the end of August, during a period that Kevin Barrett and I were actually visiting Jeremy Roth Kushel in Lawrence, Kansas. And Kevin and Jeremy are also on the line and will give their points of view as well. So this Facebook post, you know, involved the terms, a phrase that kill all Jews, every last one. It's a horrific text involving comments about kikes and wanting to kill them and not believing the Holocaust, and yet all Jews should die. It's a really horrific, horrific text associated with an image that is actually photoshopped involving a cartoonist by the name of Ben Garrison. So I believe this is a really horrific and very elaborate operation. So in late August, this post appears. I learn in mid-September. I learn about this, you know, retrospectively. But the post "Kill All Jews," you know, this is publicized by the B'nai B'rith Canada, and B'nai B'rith Canada, of course, is part of a larger organization. There's 27 offices in the United States associated with the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. In its statement, in its mission statement, B'nai B'rith exists to advocate for the security of Israel, and that's the reason for B'nai B'rith. So this post is put on my page, you know, I learn in late September, and then there is a call to Facebook. It's monitored by a native B'nai B'rith employee by the name of Ryan Belrose, and there is a call put out, some sort of alert to Facebook, which I learn, you know, answers. It's in community standards to say kill all Jews, and so suddenly there is a flurry of B'nai B'rith posts. And my name is associated, Professor Hall at the University of Lethbridge, kill all Jews, teaching it in the classroom, alert, alert, alert. I'm also described as something called a Holocaust denier, and I did do a videotape in Germany with an organization called Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, and I did look in the camera and say on tape, in a video that you can easily check out, there should be open debate on the Holocaust. There should be open debate on all subjects, that we, especially at the university, should not allow any subject to be declared to be off base or out of bounds, that no subject in history is so perfectly done, you know, so beyond reproach that it cannot be touched, it cannot be subjected to discussion, inquiry, investigation into this aspect or that aspect of it, and I refer to all subjects. You know, this is university, and academic freedom is to secure that position that universities are places where we need to ask questions, we need to amass evidence. And I must say, the 9/11 situation, the 9/11 case, you know, has been notoriously poorly handled in the academy. There should be large agencies within the academy to address, you know, the vital issues of how was the 21st century transformed into this era of unbridled militarism and police state intrusion. You know, how did it happen that the minds have been poisoned towards Muslim people generically, towards Palestinian people especially? Who's behind this? And, of course, everybody listening will know that the story of 19 largely Saudis with box cutters sort of overpowering the entire military-industrial complex of the United States, all with the objective of, you know, wanting to create a global caliphate and wanting, you know, and so hating so-called Western freedoms that they were motivated to do this. This is an audaciously insulting story. A narrative, and if universities are supposed to be for anything, it is to identify, you know, what is true from what is false. And I think all of us would embrace the idea that we should pursue the truth, especially questions and issues that are, you know, very important to how our world is structured, sort of symbolically and ethically. And so, I am one of those. Not all truthers take the position that the government of Israel and Israel First neocons are deeply involved in the 9/11 crime, and especially in the 9/11 cover-up, with academics, especially Noam Chomsky, sort of leading the cover-up.
Tony, excuse me, if I can interrupt you for just a second. If you could, because we're almost out of time with you here.
Oh, my goodness.
Could you talk, because we want to keep each of you to about 10 minutes, okay? If you could, talk about what your own legal standing is right now people might be able to do.
So fast forward to mid-September, I start to discover this. I go and, you know, talk to the administration of my university. Much to my surprise, they say, well, we're going to part company. You're basically going to be shown the door. We're going to make some kind of deal to get you out of the university. I don't go along with that. You know, I'm a tenured prof. I've been teaching for 26 years. Flash forward to October 3rd and 4th. Suddenly, I am suspended and without pay. So I go from $158,000 a year to zero in a day. And I think the most serious part of it is there is no investigation. There's no due process. Mike Mon signs a paper, and suddenly tenure is over. Tenure is obliterated, because if you can suspend me without pay and pull me out of the classroom in the middle of a term, then essentially the protections of tenure are no more. And so I'm dealing with this. The Faculty Association at the University of Lethbridge is dealing with this. There are grievances. The Canadian Association of University Teachers is dealing with this, dealing with it in a way that I think could be more robust, but the fact remains that my colleagues are dealing with it in a very slow way. Obviously, the fact that I am suspended without pay puts me suddenly in a precarious financial position. I'm sort of ruined professionally, because my own university president is mouthing these smear terms, you know, anti-Semitism, conspiracy theorist, Holocaust denial. These terms are being mounted against me by the, with no proof, by the, administration of my own university. So there is a process to deal with it, and then I do have a lawyer, Ron McDonald, and am considering my own personal course of response to what I see to be a horrific assault on the principles of academic freedom. The institution of tenure is a mainstay of academic freedom. The universities have done a terrible job in dealing with the 9/11, you know, crimes, you know, the 9/11 wars and the crimes against humanity that have flowed from this specious interpretation of 9/11, which gives license to sort of robust hyper-Islamophobia, the incitement of hatred towards Muslims to justify invasions of countries like Libya, Syria, and Iraq, to justify a kind of psychological campaign to poison people's minds against a major component of the world community, the Ummah, you know, the 2 okay. billion people who are Muslims. And so,
Tony, is there anything that people can do to support you?
Well, people have been writing the University of Lethbridge. There's been hundreds of letters. There's been interventions from all around the world. The University of Lethbridge is under, you know, a major spotlight, should be more spotlight. So it's the president is called Mike, M-A-H-O-N, Mike Mon, mike.mahon at uleth.ca. My own email is antoniusjameshall@gmail.ca.
I tell you what, Tony, if you'll send that information to Craig, we'll put it in the minutes for all of our people, okay? So that everybody can be invited to write to the dean there.
Yeah. So that's my, you know, overly long introduction to the subject. Sorry about that.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tony. Okay. All right. Well, next on the agenda is Kevin Barrett, and to introduce him is my co-facilitator, Cheryl. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Yeah, this is Cheryl. Kevin probably doesn't need an introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway here. So Dr. Kevin Barrett is an American Muslim, an Islamic studies scholar, and a critic of the war on terror. He has authored and or edited several books, including Another French False Flag and We Are Not Charlie Hebdo. He's been on Fox News, CNN, and PBS. He's a former professor of French, Arabic, Islamic studies, and humanities in Paris, San Francisco, and Wisconsin. Kevin is the radio host of False Flag Weekly News, which is archived at noliesradio.org. He's also an editor at Veterans Today and a pundit at Press TV, Russia Today, and more. His website is truthjihad.com. Kevin Barrett, welcome.
Hey, Kevin.
Oops, Kevin is still muted. Huh? Hang on a second. Hopefully
okay, he's unmuted now.
There we go. Okay.
Me?
I hear
you. There you are. Okay.
Oh, wait.
There you are,
I think.
Oh, there we are. Kevin, can you speak?
Yeah. Am I muted or unmuted?
You're unmuted now. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Well, I guess I went through some of the things that Tony's going through now, although in some ways in not quite as intense a form back in 2006. I'd been in the 9/11 truth movement since 2004. I had read David Ray Griffin's books while I was finishing up my Islamic studies related PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And when 9/11 happened, I had been the only Muslim that I knew that I ever ran into in Madison that didn't immediately assume it was obviously an inside job. My position had been, well, let's wait and see. And it took me a long time because I was busy finishing my PhD. Then in 2004, late 2003, I heard David Ray Griffin was writing the new Pearl Harbor, and I knew about his work and respected his work with empirical issues especially. So I looked into it and realized he was right, and started doing teach-ins and getting involved in 9/11 truth 2004-2005 while I was I just finished my PhD and was teaching courses in folklore, Islamic studies, and so on at the University of Wisconsin. And then in 2006, the 9/11 truth movement was picking up steam. Scholars for 9/11 truth had picked up about 100 professors. And suddenly, after ignoring us for 5 years, there was a huge pushback. And the pushback targeted teaching evil 9/11 conspiracy theories in the classroom. In June, I think it was right at the end of June, early July 2006, a scandal broke out in Wisconsin when Steve Ness, the anti-university kind of academia bashing Republican in the state assembly, put out a press release that I should be fired from my job at the University of Wisconsin teaching Introduction to Islamic Studies, because I had said terrible things about 9/11 during a radio interview the night before. I'd been on a mainstream radio show with a woman named Jessica McBride, who is the wife of the then DA of Waukesha County, who was running for Attorney General of Wisconsin. These are very connected neocons. So I was brought onto this radio show, and it was a late night radio show. And early the next morning, Assemblyman Steve Ness put out his press release saying I should be fired. So then all hell broke loose, and suddenly it was a huge mainstream media issue, a bunch of state legislators saying I should be fired from the University of Wisconsin. So I fought back and got a lot of mainstream coverage during the subsequent months, continued to teach. The university did an investigation and discovered there was nothing wrong with what I was doing in my Islamic studies class, which was a 16-week class, and 1 week would be about the war on terror, and a fraction of that would be about 9/11, and I was presenting different perspectives on 9/11 without planning to even inform the students what mine was. But so the university couldn't possibly argue with that, and they didn't fire me. However, the negative publicity generated from this, which included, of course, you know, zillions of hate emails and death threats from AstroTurf groups created by Lynn Cheney, ACTA, A-C-T-A, is Lynn Cheney's group that polices the American Academy. So they put out my email address and got a witch hunt going in that way. And all of the media stuff in the age of the internet, of course, is pretty much permanent. So that meant that while my credentials as a 9/11 truth person were enhanced, my credentials as a member of the American Academy were basically ruined. And so this was, I believe, part of an orchestrated response to the rise of the truth movement. And the people orchestrating this response presumably were essentially the same team that did 9/11, which in many respects is the same team that's about to reassume the reins of power in the United States in the Trump administration. And as far as legal resources to this go, I'm now unemployable in the Western Academy. And I was approached by a couple of lawyers who looked into the case and said that there really was no remedy, at least not that was worth a pro bono representation, because there's no law against discrimination on the basis of political views. So the university can not hire you because you're a Republican, a Democrat, a truther, an anti-truther, anything they want. And of course, the part of this issue was that I wasn't only basically locked out from teaching at the University of Wisconsin after that semester. I was on a semester-to-semester basis, not like Tony. I didn't have tenure. But also, I was turned down for a tenure-track job at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater when I was the best of three finalists and then the only finalist when the other two went elsewhere. And the Dean of Humanities has gone public saying that I was essentially turned away and the position was closed and a large sum of money was given back to the feds because of my political views. Unfortunately, though, there's no legal remedy for political discrimination. I argued, well, maybe it's religious discrimination. If you can't hire someone who believes 9/11 is an inside job, that rules out every Muslim intellectual on earth. The polls show 80% of Muslims who respond to Western pollsters say it was an inside job, and the reality is probably more than that. So essentially, Muslims have been banned from the American Academy, but that's apparently not going to fly in court. And so how can folks in the truth community support me? Well, there are a whole bunch of people on this call who have supported me over the years. I want to thank all of you. It's great to hear Mike Cook again. It's been a couple of years since we connected. And I really appreciate people subscribing to my shows by way of my website, truthjihad.com. I'm now essentially a kind of independent gadfly journalist. And so just kind of spreading the word about the shows, the books. I've got books out about recent false flags, the false flag trilogy about the Paris false flags, and then the false flag in Orlando, pointing out that 9/11 launched a program that is continuing to this day. And it looks like it's going to get even worse now with this new administration. So I hope people will keep abreast of the current situation. You know, 9/11 of course, was the PR launch for all of this, but they're continuing to hold smaller PR stunts on a very regular basis. And the main script that they're supporting, of course, is the war on Islam for Greater Israel, disguised as a war on terror. And the way they're doing that is through inciting Islamophobia, through equating Islam and radical Islam, supposedly, with terrorism. And so that's the program, and I appreciate it when people are forthright about this and you know, not sort of tiptoeing around sensibilities. I think it's important to just call it the way it is, which is there's a religious war right now between the Muslim world, which has been in charge of the holy places in Palestine ever since Islam existed, and this Zionist movement that has invaded and occupied Palestine is committing genocide there. This will never be acceptable to the world's nearly 2 billion Muslims. And so we're in the middle of this huge religious war in which the Zionists control all the levers of Western power and are orchestrating a worldwide genocide against Islam and Muslims as a way to essentially keep their Greater Israel project going and expanding. And so that's my my piece. I think I hope I'm within the 10 minutes. And
you're on time around in case there's Kevin.
Else. Way to go.
Thank you. I would like to ask you, though, when you ask people to support your weekly show, do they do that by just becoming members of No Lies Radio, or is there another way?
Well, to support my work, you have to go to truthjihad.com mm-hmm. and become a subscriber. And then that gets you early access to the radio shows and supports all of my work. You can also support False Flag Weekly News on No Lies Radio. There's a particular program for that at No Lies Radio, but normally that doesn't go directly to me.
I see. So that's indirect support. Okay. Thank you. Before we move on to Jeremy, does anybody have a question for either Kevin or Tony regarding what they have said, not about the general nature of the subject, but just about anything that they've reported in their past and the events that have happened to them and so forth? Does anybody,
Ken, they'll all be muted, so
have that type of question?
Ken,
if so, we're going to go
Ken,
briefly into question
Ken, can you hear me?
Mode and
Ken,
give you an opportunity
Ken?
To ask that question by pressing star. Not responding. Cheryl, can you put us in a question and answer mode? I guess. Cheryl? Am I still on the call? Can anybody hear me?
Ken?
Yes, Craig.
Yeah, it's Craig. Sorry, I was trying to, I did not realize I was muted there. I'm just concerned that because Tony has to go, maybe you give priority to somebody that wants to ask Tony a question just because he's got to leave momentarily.
Yes, exactly. That's what we're trying to do. So I just put us in a question. Oh, I thought I had just put us in a question and answer mode. And
yeah, but then you turned it off.
That turned off. Well, okay, now we're back into it again. So star 6, if you'd like to ask either Tony or Kevin a question about what they've just said regarding their own personal situations. Star 6. And I don't – oh, there's one question. Okay, Sheila has a question, so we'll take that. Go ahead, Sheila.
Hello?
Yep.
Am I on?
Yes.
This
Sheila?
Is Nita. Tony, I wanted to ask you to clarify about the Facebook page. I didn't understand why this article appeared on your Facebook in August, and you didn't know about it until the mid-September.
Oh, we have to unmute Tony. Hang on, Tony.
Can you hear me?
Yep,
go ahead, everything
Tony.
A go to speak? Okay,
yep.
So I read about this. What happened in mid-September when I became aware of these B'nai B'rith post, because I was not informed in late August what was going on.
But it was on your Facebook page, no?
Well, the timing is on August 26th. It's reported by Bene Brith that a person called Glenn Davidson, who I do know, who does live in Lethbridge, he puts this post on my page. And as you know, Facebook has all kinds of settings, so my particular way of setting, other people can put a post on my page. And interestingly, August 26th, we were preoccupied at Jeremy Roth Kuschel's place in Lawrence, Kansas. And Jeremy will have, you know, probably thoughts about all of that. So as I learn about it, there is this immediate response, and a person called Ryan Belrose is monitoring my Facebook page and sees this post. I don't see this Facebook post.
Meaning, what was the point of, meaning anybody can put anything then on your Facebook page?
Yeah, so I'm just going to explain it. So this post is put on my page supposedly by Glenn Davidson, although I have now interviewed myself, Glenn Davidson, and he says he did not post it. And actually, we have traced the source of this item back to a person called Joshua Goldberg, a 21-year-old Jewish man in Florida, who is a troll, and that's the word used for him, and he actually is under custody now for the charges of channeling bomb-making material to Islamic jihadists. And I get this information from Ben Garrison, whose face was photoshopped into the picture, 2005 Getty image picture of an Israeli security guard strangling an anti-Zionist rabbi within Israel. So this picture is photoshopped by Joshua Goldberg, and there's a text attributed to Ben Garrison, this horrific text. So Bene Brith's story is that somehow this finds its way into Glenn Davidson possession, and he puts it on my page, and then immediately it's monitored, and it's monitored by Ryan Belrose, who just happens to phone the police at that moment and initiate this investigation of me for hate speech and incitement to genocide, like the moment it's posted. So he's just sitting there, and there it's posted, and so then there is a campaign, a Bene Brith campaign, to get Facebook to take it off. And at first it fails, and supposedly the story is that saying kill all Jews is within Facebook parameters as, you know, community standards. So that creates a sort of response, oh my gosh. And then there's hundreds of Bene Brith members who post to Facebook, who alert Facebook. So Facebook then takes the post off but does not inform me. And so it's on for, I don't know, 3 days. I don't really, you know, that, and it's just a story that I'm told from Bene Brith. I don't know. But anyway, okay. It's taken off. And then there is this intense media campaign, Professor Hall, kill all Jews, you know, teaching hate, University of Lethbridge, Facebook has to be regulated, fire Professor Hall. Then there's a petition of Bene Brith with 2,000 signatures calling for a kind of witch hunt, that I should be fired, that I should be somehow held to account for this Facebook post, which I did not,
Yeah, we have other questions, so thanks for that response, Tony. Okay, well, let's go to the next question.
Is that clear, though? Is it coming across? Does that explain it, Sheila? Okay.
Hi.
Michael, go ahead, and please keep it very brief, and Tony, please keep your answer succinct because we have to move on, okay? Thank you. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, hey, thanks. I didn't really expect to get on. I was just going to say, hey, Kevin, it's good to hear you again. Yeah, thanks, Tony and Kevin, for all the great work. There's really no question here.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go to the next. Please have a question ready if you're going to ask a question, because we need to move on. Thank you. Who's next?
Is it Xander?
Hello?
Yeah, whoever's on next, go ahead. That would be Xander. Xander, please make it brief. Thank you. Go ahead. Xander.
Yeah, go ahead.
Xander, go ahead, please.
Oh, man.
Xander Arena.
Whew.
Okay, well, let's go to the next question.
Okay, James Hufford. And
James,
I have more a point of information. I believe that about 3 years ago I had a run-in with this Jeff Goldberg, and he just simply tried to bully me into agreeing to certain things that just egregious things that he was saying about Jews, and of course I wouldn't, but he finally...
Is it Joshua Goldberg? You referred to Jeff. Is it Joshua Goldberg? This is the name I have, Joshua Goldberg.
Well, I may be mistaken. It may be another person, but that name rings a bell, Goldberg.
Okay. This is thank you, James. This is only about questions for these two, and so
yeah.
We need to move on now, and we'll go back into lecture mode here real quick. All right, and please excuse me for the brevity of this introduction, but because we are running short on time, I'm just going to briefly say we want to extend our warmest welcome. Seems I can unmute him. Oh, cripe. He would be stubborn tonight. Ah. Cheryl, would you try to unmute Jeremy, please? I can't seem to do it. We want to extend our warmest welcome to Jeremy Roth Kuschel, who is an independent documentarian and political analyst, and a We Are Change member and peace activist. He was illegally arrested on May 9th, 2016, at the Kansas City Public Library, along with the library official who came to his aid. Jeremy, are you able to speak?
Yes.
Okay. Got you unmuted? Okay. The floor is yours. Go ahead and tell us your story, please, and what we can do to help. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me. We just want to acknowledge my friends, colleagues, and mentors, Tony and Kevin. Before I briefly introduce myself, I do want to just say how I believe that my case might tie into what Tony is facing. The timing is very interesting and suspicious. I was arrested in late spring 2016, May 9th. Tony and Kevin came and visited me to do some lectures in Lawrence, Kansas here in August, late August. Tony was aware, I remember talking to him on the way back from the airport after I picked him up, that there was an increased brouhaha that appeared to be surrounding him in the local press, and that he thought they had their eyes on him. I had posted on Facebook, I'm rarely on Facebook, I had posted that I was looking forward to seeing Tony when he was going to be here. So, and that in addition to the fact that it looks like that B'nai B'rith has a tendency to orchestrate their attacks on academics at the turn of the semester, looks like they looked very likely, the facts point to that they looked for an opportunity to target Tony. There was this digital false flag that was posted on his page that was very much set up to have actionable language on it where they could disrupt Tony's career and defame him. And the last thing on that is, I went and visited Tony the week that he was suspended. The very end of it, we found out from Tony's friend that this B'nai B'rith indigenous operative, Ryan Belarus, had been on the CBC with David Gray the week before, utilizing this post that Tony didn't post on his Facebook page in an actionably defamatory manner, basically painting Tony with basically saying Tony is responsible for this post that was put on his page. So to me, the timing of this seems to be a ramping up of the targeting of academics and activists who are delving into the realm of the truth about September 11th and the role of political Zionism in that act, but also in the ongoing cover-up that was spoken about. So on May 9th, I went to a lecture by Dennis Ross, the former ambassador to Israel, at the Kansas City Public Library Plaza branch. They say in Kansas City, Plaza, but I'm from L.A., so I say Plaza. And my background, briefly, is that I'm Jewish, Mexican-American, born and raised in L.A., went to college on the East Coast, Williams College, got a B.A. in religion, took a year off from school, and got deeply involved in the peace movement in a group called Peace Action, which comes out of the anti-nuclear movement, SANE, FREEZE. And that's how I really got my deeper start in the peace movement. And after I graduated, right before September 11th, I decided to not go into the academy, but to pursue music with my friends. And we ended up creating a program called Hip Hop Empowerment to teach young kids. From there, I finally found out about September 11th in 2005 when I moved back to LA and quickly got up to speed and started doing activism on my own. And then with a good group of people started We Are Change LA and did a bunch of different types of truth activism. Met my wife in LA, and now we're back in Lawrence, Kansas. I continue to work on documenting. I'm working on a documentary about September 11th called Uncoverage. So that background led me to go to this event. I like to look for events locally where I can go and do some documentation and also do some speech and some questioning of public figures. People who I've confronted in this area include John Yoo, Governor Sam Brownback, Secretary of State Kris Kobach. And then so I saw Dennis Ross was coming, decided to go to it, RSVP'd through the library, through the Kansas City Public Library, and met a friend from Kansas City, Greg McCarron, who's also a truth activist, and then we proceeded to enter into the venue. Before, on our way into the venue, we were stopped by a uniformed, what ended up to be an off-duty sergeant of the Kansas City Police Department who wanted to search us before we went in. I didn't see anybody else being stopped or searched. I asked him the parameters of the stop. He said that he'd been tasked by the co-sponsors of the event to search me. I mused out loud whether it was because of my background of being on the public record of asking questions uncomfortable to some public figures and documented for the public record. He didn't deny that, but he didn't confirm it, and he said that it was my right to do that. So I consented to it. We were searched. He found in my bag my books, my pens, my camera, my notepads, all First Amendment accoutrements were there, and then we continued on in. The event was a bigger event than I had sort of ascertained. It was introduced by Truman's grandson, Clifton, another member of the local Jewish Community Foundation, which was a co-sponsor, and then a video message from Shimon Peres from Tel Aviv, I believe. After that, Dennis Ross gave his lecture. After that, they set up microphones. I was the first one up to the microphone. I had noticed that there were security that were keeping their eye on me. It looked like were close to me around the entire event. I was a little intimidated, but it was like a honeypot. The microphone is like a honeypot to me. It's like I have to go. So I went up and I asked a question that brought in three points. First was I just found out that Truman's daughter, Margaret, had said in her book that the Sharon Gang, Zionistic terrorist group, had sent mail bombs to Truman in the year before Israel's creation. The second data point was that in the King David Hotel bombing, that amongst the dead were Jewish people. And then I brought in the idea that both the states that operate in my name, the United States and Israel, being a Jewish American and identified myself as such, had this track record of being involved in state-sponsored terrorism that sometimes involved the death of its own tribe or its own citizens. At that point, I brought up September 11th, and I quickly referenced Alan Sobrowski, the War College and Marine veteran who's spoken publicly about the Zionist role on September 11th as a shorthand. Then Ross answered me, said it was outrageous that I had accused Israel of September 11th. He didn't defend the United States' role on September 11th. I'd accused them both. And there was a quick back and forth. At that point, he accused me of making things up. Then he tried to wrap it up by quoting Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, saying, "You're allowed your own opinions, but you're not allowed your own facts." And I said, I leaned back to the microphone and said, "True." And I was about to, I was starting to supply facts I was aware of in regards to September 11th. At that point, I was grabbed without warning from behind in a very hard fashion on my upper left arm by the head of the Jewish Community Foundation's, their director of security, who was the director of the private security detail that evening that had been allowed to come to the library event by the librarian who had set the event up, Stephen Woolfolk. He ended up also getting, he tried to moderate or be an intermediary to let the security know that this was against the library protocols, that Steve, by the way, had laid out clearly to the co-sponsors before that force was not to be used unless there was an immediate physical threat, and no one was to be even asked to leave unless it was agreed by all three sponsors, which were the Jewish Community Foundation, the Truman Library Institute, and the Kansas City Public Library. We all ended up being taken out of the forum and then ultimately arrested in the foyer. And Steve was pretty badly beat up, had injuries in his knee that took still healing to this day. I was not physically damaged as much. I had marks on my upper arm, but we both went to jail and we're both still facing charges. Mine are trespassing and resisting arrest, and Steve is interfering with my arrest. It was not talked about for a while, but all the lawyers involved wanted to keep it hushed up. My instinct was to talk about it. I told my friends and family. I told Tony and Kevin about it months before it finally got onto the public record. And finally, we decided to push the issue because we needed to start crowdfunding for legal expenses, but more importantly, that I felt that this was a big First Amendment case, and it was, and the involvement of 9/11 Truth as central to this. So who's responsible for this? I'm going to try to move through this very quickly. Apparently, the Truman Library Institute and the Jewish Community Foundation of Kansas City were both involved in this security detail. Since then, my wife has been able to brighten one of the videos that we have. The only video that's been publicly released at this point is the video that my friend Greg McCarron took with my camera that I handed to him when I stepped to the microphone. In it, you can see a woman who's at the other microphone from me doing hand signals that, and it's right when I begin to talk about September 11th. She starts making her first hand signals to this other still unidentified guy in a suit who's standing over me at the microphone. He gets very close to me, almost in an intimidating fashion while I'm still finishing up my question. Just in our last court date a couple weeks ago, we've now identified this woman as actually working for the Truman Library Institute. She's the head of their development fund. And she has a government email address. She works for the National Archives. So in a very real way, what we have here in a legal fashion is this was a designated public forum. It was a public event that the public was invited to. The case law for this is that the government is under very strict scrutiny about discrimination, especially about viewpoints. It's very clear that my question was actually the most content-relevant question of the night, being that it was about Truman and Israel to start with. And then it was also, now it's become very clear that it was the actual viewpoint of my question itself that began to get the so-called moderators and security involved in and ultimately, physically interjecting themselves into the multiple First Amendment activities, including press, including speech, including assembly. I was recording the whole thing. I intended to follow up after the event with Dennis Ross himself, maybe with Clifton Truman, Truman's grandson. This is where I'm able to get the richest material in terms of press and documentarianism is in a more one-on-one setting. In my interaction with Vice President Biden back in 2009, it was the intimate nature of his face and the emotions that were displayed that was actually able to convince skeptical people like my brother that there was actually something to September 11th rather than this was a conspiracy theory. So all of this was stopped and arrested by force by a private security group that included an off-duty detective who was the arresting officer named Brent Parsons. He actually works in the Department of Homeland Security Fusion Center in the Kansas City area. He, along with the director of JCF Security, who grabbed me, whose name is Blair Hawkins, both of them have been to Israel for training by the security forces in Israel, and then come back, and within a year, this is done to an American citizen in an American library.
Jeremy, I think that gives us a pretty good summary of what happened to you, and you said that you do have a legal defense fund set up?
Yes. The best way, right now we're trying to fund depositions by the two main arresting officers. They each cost about $1,500 from my lawyers. If people are willing to support that, they can actually PayPal my wife's PayPal account, which is laurie_pershall@hotmail.com. laurie_pershall@hotmail.com. And then the other thing
forward. Go ahead.
Oh, sure, I'll forward that to you. And then the other thing is to email me specifically, jeremywrk@gmail.com, for legal advice, legal input, because what's going on right now is we are able to do a bunch of discovery, and I believe that my case is actually indicative of what's going on with the 9/11 cover-up, and the fact that we were targeted for no apparent reason hints at the usage of databases, and there's a lot more information there of research we've done. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if you'll forward those two things and any other links that you think are relevant to Craig, then we'll get them in the minutes for our wider membership. Okay.
Ken.
Quick.
Ken.
Just for if you have a question for Jeremy about what he's just said, please keep it very brief and. Jeremy, please keep your answer succinct because we're way over time on this now. So go ahead. Let's see. Who is anybody? Star 6 if you have a question. Star 6 if you'd like to get in the queue to ask a question of Jeremy.
Ken, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sure.
Yeah, I just want to say, are we going to listen to Kat give us an update on the Brooklyn Commons before we do this, or are we going to do how we do
no, that? No, we're going to do the Q&A for Jeremy, and then we'll do Kat, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So are there any questions for Jeremy? I see Michael Cook has one, so we'll go there. Is anybody unmuted?
I think it's on me, but I just wanted
that
to make
that. That was you,
Cheryl.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So we'll go to Michael Cook next. Michael Cook?
Oh, hey, cool. Thanks. I'm off mute.
Yes, you're up here. Ask your question very succinctly, please.
Okay,
ask your question.
Very succinctly. I had a legal case, and I was looking for some help. So I don't know if anything can happen from here or not, but talk to Kevin Barrett. He knows all about it. Thanks.
Okay. Unless you have a censorship issue to raise, I think that'll have to do it for that question. And we will now go to our final speaker, which is going to be Kat McGuire, the story of Melissa Ennen. And this is going to be a very short presentation, but we think that it's relevant to the It's a different type of censorship or harassment. And Cheryl, do you know where Kat is?
I don't. I think you're
going
to have to unmute everybody in order to get Kat. I don't know where she's, which one she's coming in on.
Oh, Kat, can you hear us? Are you able to speak? All right. Well, I guess we'll just have to take it off. All right,
hey,
Kat,
Dan,
everybody else, please be quiet.
You forgot to ask people at the end. Oh,
I'm sorry, Barbara. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, that's right. I forgot that some people cannot access the queue. Barbara, if Barbara or anybody else has a question for any of the three speakers that we just had, you may ask them now.
Yes, I do, if I could.
Quickly, please.
Yeah. Question for Kevin and also for Tony. I forget which one of you said that you had found, I believe it was Kevin, that political discrimination on political grounds is okay. Is that by state law, federal law? That's shocking. What is the source for that, and, you know, legally?
Well, yeah, here in Wisconsin, there is no federal, state, or in most jurisdictions, local law against political discrimination in hiring. There are these protected categories. So, for example, you cannot be discriminated against in hiring statewide in Wisconsin for having a criminal record. But there are a number of these categories, and then there can be local laws that create other protected categories. And religion, I believe, is a protected category in Whitewater, and I think in Madison, too, locally. But neither in Whitewater nor Madison, nor I believe anywhere in Wisconsin, and certainly not under any federal law, is political discrimination a protected category. So basically, there's no legal protection, or at least no direct legal protection for any form of political discrimination in hiring.
Okay, and then the two follow-up questions for Tony. Is that the same in Canada, do you know? And for both of you, what about a legal action on just plain First Amendment rights, speech rights grounds? Okay, thank you.
Tony, you want to respond to that?
Kevin?
Well, yeah, Tony may not still be with us here. I think that, as I said, there are various possible grounds. Certainly, Tony, I think, has a much stronger case than I did, given his having tenure. And hopefully, I'm hoping Tony will indeed be suing them. But in my case, possibly there would be a First Amendment case, or, as I said, possibly a religious discrimination case. However, the two attorneys who actually approached me and looked into this.
Don't force it. We'll have to shave it down.
The attorneys I spoke to said that it would not be worth doing a pro bono case. And since I don't have money to hire attorneys, that's the only kind of case I could have.
No, I understood. If money weren't an object,
okay.
I was asking about the legal grounds. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Barbara. Okay, so with that
done, could I just ask a question here? One quick question. That Steve Salada, this is Cheryl.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, Steve Salada won a viewpoint discrimination case at the University of, was it Chicago, where he was hired and then fired. And I wonder, what's the difference between viewpoint and political discrimination?
Huh. Now, I wasn't aware that he actually won a legal case. I thought that his viewpoint discrimination issue was resolved within the university structure itself. Did he win a civil judgment?
He got some money, but maybe I think they settled out of court or something.
Yeah, this was at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they settled, and I believe, maybe he filed in court or something. I don't know. And
Okay.
But I don't think that that was because there was any kind of protected category or anything. I imagine, and they, you know, I don't really know the details of that.
Oh, okay. That may be the case then. All right.
Okay, thank you. This is Ken. I'd like to ask Jeremy, how is it, Jeremy, that they're able to file trespassing charges on you if the library is not willing to prosecute?
Yes, that is still a question on the table, and that is part of the legal wrangling that's going on right now. In fact, it's pretty clear that this is the library and was arrested, and the executive director of the library has since publicly said they did not support either arrest and that they completely see this as a First Amendment case. So apparently the Jewish Community Foundation has some type of input into the pretrial process in terms of having some space to be able to try to get both of us to sign away our civil liability rights. That's what they've been looking for in exchange for the charges being dropped. But you're completely correct. The venue holder appears to be the Kansas City Public Library, and the prosecutor has now publicly said in the newspaper that apparently the only way that the JCF would have any interest in being able to negotiate a civil liability waiver would be as if they were the ones who were trespassed upon, and that's pretty clear.
Right. Okay, thank you for that, Jeremy. Okay, so now we'll go to Kat McGuire with the story of, very briefly, please, Kat, because we're way over time here, of Melissa Ellen. Go ahead, Kat.
Okay, just to make sure you can hear me, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Back at September 11th, a group of us had Christopher Bolin come to speak. He was canceled in one venue, censored, but Melissa Ennen, who is with Brooklyn Commons, a community space, progressive community space, she is completely committed to free speech, had him come. She encountered a lot of resistance of this shadowy group who came together, and they felt that they wanted to boycott her around it, but she went ahead. The night of, there was violence by these Zionist, rabid kind of settler types. We ended up having to have 6 police and 2 security guards. Melissa got her head pushed into a wall 3 times with her glasses broken. So we thought, okay, it's over. But no, afterwards, they have continued to harass her, saying we're going to keep this boycott up. They want 2 things. One, they want her to apologize for having had Christopher Bolin speak. And 2, this ragtag group that calls itself Common Decency New York City Coalition or something like that. The second thing they want is for one of them to be on her board to vet her speakers. So, of course, she's opposed to that. They won't. There's been back and forth email where they want her to do this, and they won't say who their names are. Finally, 4 people came forward with their names, but they're saying they won't because, quote, unquote, they do not feel safe sharing their identities with Christopher Bolin, David Duke, and other representatives of the far right with whom Melissa has expressed a willingness to work. Well, they left out Hitler, and other than that, it's all lies anyway. So, cut to what's going on right now. In addition to that email exchange, they have really gone sort of ballistic because at one point Melissa said at some event that some of her family members who supported Sanders ended up voting for Trump. And I guess that was a green light to them that she really is from, quote,
Oh, we lost you, Kat. Okay. Well, I think that gives us.
You know what? She was coming. Can you hear? She was coming in on one of Pablo's lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
This is Dita. Can I say
something? May I just
finalize
with one more sentence or two?
Yeah.
I'm at the final part. What they've done is hacked into her email phone and her neighbors and her subtenants, getting people rallied around to boycott Melissa. And what's particularly egregious is when they hacked into her stuff, they went after family members, 40 of her family members, including children as young as 11-year-olds, probably like nieces or nephews. 11 of her family members are in universities, and basically when they got to the family members, they were able to hack into their emails and go to the family members' communities to say, this person has a relative, Melissa, who is like neo-Nazi, you have to do something. So it's been a full court press. If she doesn't apologize and put someone on their board, they're going to continue the boycott. And what they're saying is they're going online across all social media to really destroy her. And JVP is supposedly negotiating right now to because they want to see the Commons stay open.
Thank you, Kat. Wow. Okay, so we'll use a few minutes here now for a brief discussion. If anybody has a relevant point to make,
yeah,
or perhaps
to say.
One moment, please, yeah. or another case that's relevant that you could describe in a few words to add to the discussion. Go ahead, Nita.
Okay, I wanted to add that Melissa has been receiving death threats, and I believe her some of her nephews and nieces received death threats, but I know some of her family members received death threats, and they're not even in New York State. They're somewhere in the Midwest.
Yikes.
Barbara, isn't there also
the Kuchnik in Boston?
I can't hear you, Richard.
Oh.
Wait till they go into...
Hang on. Let's give Barbara a chance here because she can't usually use the Q&A, and then we'll go into Q&A mode. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, isn't James Tracy, wasn't he also removed from his tenured position?
I have more on that, too.
I'm sorry, what?
I have more on that. His website was suspended just recently, and he's taken it private.
Yes. But wasn't he suspended from a position?
Yes,
at university?
He was.
Yes.
Fired, yes. Fired.
And then
Stephen Jones.
Yes.
He wasn't fired. Was
yeah.
He?
Well, he effectively was. He was forced to retire early or be fired.
Forced to retire early. That's right. Okay. As people may know, that Joy Corriga, who we've tried very hard to get on the show, but we were not able to get a hold of her, just a week or two ago was also apparently dismissed from a tenured position in Oberlin College. And she had made comments regarding Israel's role in 9/11 on social media.
Could you spell it, please?
Yeah, I think it's K-A-R-E-G-A. Her first name is Joy.
Uh-huh.
But we've been unable to get a hold of her. I know that others may want to make a quick comment here, so we're going to go into Q&A mode so we can do that without a lot of background noise. And star 6, if you... star 6, if you like to make a comment. This is the opportunity here. Star 6... We'll put you in the queue to make a comment if you have a comment or a question. Okay, well, it looks like we've got a couple. I need to unmute Kevin, if he's still on with us, and Jeremy. Okay, Kevin. Cheryl, I'm not able to unmute Kevin. Maybe can you try it?
Yeah, I'll try. Just a second.
Okay. Maybe I can get Jeremy here.
Okay, Kevin was unmuted, but he's back to muted. Let me see.
Yeah, yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay, now you're.
Yeah, we can hear you, Kevin. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not having any luck with Jeremy either. You want to try? There he goes.
Yeah,
I got him.
Good,
forgot,
yeah.
Or somebody.
Yeah, you just unmuted me.
All right. So if you have a comment or a question, star six. Let's go to the first questioner.
Hey, this is Xander. You might have identified me incorrectly. Question, or actually a comment for everybody. On September 11th, 15th anniversary here in Phoenix, our truth group at ASU got together to rally at the official memorial. Rather than hold a truth-centric thing, we went to them. And we faced what might have been considered discrimination or censorship. I don't know. They asked us to leave and cited trespassing. It was a public venue. It was at a public park. It was available for everybody, so we argued our free speech stuff. But we had also spoken with a constitutional attorney prior to going down there. There was probably about 35 of us. And they said that when a private group leases or borrows or uses a public area, then they can ask one to leave and do have grounds to do so. So we effectively left the area but then stood at the entrances and got our point across just fine. So I guess it's just a message to everybody. Don't be discouraged. Keep in the fight. That's all.
Okay. Thank you, Xander. Anybody else? Oh, let's go to the next one here. Okay.
This is Richard Kreshnick in Boston. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, Richard. Go ahead.
I just wanted to remind people of the case of Norman Finkelstein, a scholar about the falsification of Israel-Palestine history, writing in support of Palestinian rights, author of several books and articles. He was fired from his teaching position.
Yeah, right. Was he tenured also?
No.
Okay.
He was rejected for tenure. That's how they got rid of him.
Yep. Okay, thanks. Next questioner.
Hi, Ed Jewett speaking here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Ed, go ahead.
I just wanted to throw on one piece of information which adds to the general tenor of the whole thing, and that is the current and ongoing wars between Kellogg's and Breitbart, with threats to take away advertising money and a counteraction. It's not of the same ilk, but as long as you're talking about political repression and the right to speak, then it falls right in the middle of what we call the media wars. I'm done.
Okay, thank you for that. And next one, go ahead. McCarran, R. McCarran, 816 Exchange, you're up.
I'm sorry, I had it on mute. I apologize. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm Greg McCarran. I actually videotaped the incident with Jeremy at the KC Public Library with Dennis Ross, and I wanted to throw in something that Jeremy and I have talked quite a bit about, and that's there's a common thread between all these cases, between Kevin's case, between Anthony's case, Jeremy's case, Joy Kariga and Melissa Ennis, and all these different people, is that in addition to having the same, pretty much the same coterie of people around them trying to suppress them in one form or another, is that the so-called alternative media has really been very silent about all of these cases. And I have a feeling that it's time not only to focus on the people who are actively trying to suppress free speech, but also on the people who are supposed to be the alternative to the mainstream narratives that are actively not covering these stories, and are even worse, are the people who have been attacking those who would question what really happened on September 11th. And I feel it's really time to really work to raise awareness to these entities and these individuals and these outlets, because I feel they've had a very, very negative impact that is not really focused on enough.
Thank you very much for that point, because what we're trying to do now is look at how we could support these folks, and that would be one way, certainly, to bring pressure to bear on the so-called alternative media, who ought to be all over this.
Can I respond to that really quickly?
Who's this? Jeremy?
Jeremy, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Jeremy, Kevin, and just feel free to jump in whenever you want. You guys aren't muted. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Greg, for bringing that up, actually, because that was something I forgot to bring up, that in the midst of this, it's been interesting to figure out how to judo this arrest into getting press about a phrase such as state-sponsored terrorism involving the U.S. and Israel. And it got picked up by the AP and the local paper and went around the world, all the way even into arrests and Times of Israel and ABC. But meanwhile, I gave the scoop to Democracy Now! And InfoWars and Mint Press News and We Are Change, weeks before it was actually went mainstream. And only Danny Quest at We Are Change has reported on it out of all of those. And so one thing we could do, I think, would be to try to push these cases, including Tony's, including Joy's, including Melissa's, including mine, into Democracy Now! And InfoWars, and maybe even into some of the alternative media that hasn't picked it up yet, to basically try to get them to cover these issues in terms of free speech cases.
Mm-hmm. Great idea. Okay, maybe we need to figure out a way to follow up on that, but okay, let's go to the next question.
Okay.
Yeah, Ken, we've discussed this a little bit previously, and you can help lead me if I go off on a tangent, but my suggestion is that this censorship is far more prevalent and endemic than just 9/11. Though I've had issues here in Lafayette with dealing with Purdue University. Many of you know that Meta Sozin is on staff at Purdue. And A&E was here. I had gone over to Purdue Exponent paper to do an interview. And then we had an advertisement going in, and the day prior to the publishing of the paper, the editor called me and told me that they were pulling the ad. The president of Purdue University is a gentleman by the name of Mitch Daniels, who's a former governor of Indiana, GOP. The predecessor to Governor Pence. He's a former administrator of Eli Lilly and then was an economic advisor for Bush before he ran for governor. While he was governor, he attempted to do a censorship of Howard Zinn throughout the entire state in public education. And then when he came to Purdue, he attempted to continue the censorship. It didn't fly, and then there was some blowback by professors within the university in that regard. The way the system works, I was kind of curious, at least in Indiana.
Yeah, we've got to keep it very brief, though, because we're over time here, okay? So
okay,
I think just letting people know about that was helpful. Thank you. That's a good contribution. Let's go to the next questioner.
Yeah, this is Pablo. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Pablo, go ahead.
Yeah, I just was going to say that, the name, Stephen Phillips, a violinist in New Zealand or Australia, he drove with his family into oncoming traffic in the middle of the day and got killed, along with some of the other people in the car. So this guy was as responsible as anybody on the planet. That makes no sense to me. I think that's a part of what's going on.
Okay, thanks. Next.
Hello, this is David Rold calling in with the Boston 9/11 Truth Group.
Yeah, sir.
Mm-hmm. I was there at Brooklyn Commons when Christopher Bowen spoke, and I wanted to follow up on what Kat said about JVP, which is Jewish Voice for Peace. So Jewish Voice for Peace is like a a Jewish group that supports Palestinian rights, but they sort of act as gatekeepers for like exactly what people are allowed to say about Zionism and Palestine, and Jewish Voice for Peace actually supported the protest against Christopher Bolin. On their website, they advertised that people should go protest against Christopher Bolin's event. So I don't see them as like being the solution to keep Brooklyn Commons open. They're part of the problem. Like Jewish Voice for Peace is sending me emails asking for money, saying that they want to stop allegations of anti-Semitism against people who criticize Israeli policy, but then they do it themselves, calling Christopher Bolin anti-Semitic because he investigates the Zionist connection with 9/11, and they've also attacked Alison Ware. So I just wanted people.
Thanks. Exactly. Yeah. I was going to bring her up too. Yeah, right. Yeah. Alison Ware was smeared pretty heavily by them. Okay, thank you for that. Let's go to the next comment.
Yeah, this is Nita Renfrew. A couple of comments. I was one of the organizers of the Christopher Bolin event at the Brooklyn Commons. And I want to say that the New York 9/11 Truth Movement is also responsible for gatekeeping on Israeli involvement in 9/11. And if we have the 9/11 movements around the country doing that, how can we expect the alternative media to want to deal with it? And two, I wanted to say that in response, somebody brought up Finkelstein. Well, Norman Finkelstein was sent an article from Haaretz, I guess it was, about the Brooklyn Commons thing, and which, you know, said that Christopher Bolin was a Holocaust denier. He never brought up the Holocaust in the talk, and that he was an anti-Semite and a Nazi and so on. And so Norman Finkelstein contacted Melissa Ennen and offered to give a free course on John Stuart Mill's book on liberty. So he gave an 8-week course on it, which was excellent. And as a response to that, so we have that to thank him for.
Okay. Silver lining on that cloud. And next, is there anybody next?
Yeah, I'm next. This is Ed Jewett again with just a quick comment. Somebody said something about the alternative media, and I wanted to point out, hold on for a second, that many of the alternative media are themselves under attack as purveyors of fake news, and therefore they've had to shift their attention to self-defense and counterattack. So there is a plan, and some of us in the alternative media have addressed this issue. My own recent blog entry, Landscape Gardening, for example. But we need to hang together.
That's a point. Okay, thank you. And I think we got one more comment, and then we can go on to our next guest.
Hi. Yeah, this is Dick Atlee, and I just wanted to, in terms of Democracy Now! And some of the other ones that were mentioned, is that they have a long history of 9/11 denial, so that it's clear that in the alt media, 9/11 is not subject to freedom of speech. I mean, it's one of those ironies.
Okay, and last, Pablo.
This is Kat, and just a quick comment. As part of the course, Norman Finkelstein really stepped up to the plate and said he would like to sponsor with course people a open debate with this shadowy group that's boycotting Melissa and with other people. And so that's sort of like a way to quell this nebulous boycott that they're having. So I just think we should all be aware that Norman Finkelstein really stepped up to the plate to try to do something in the interest of free speech.
Nice.
Thank you.
Very good to hear.
This is Cheryl. And can I just make a comment also on this before we move on?
Well, please make it quick, because I think we have to get to our next guest.
I will make it really quick. I, as many of you know, I have the radio show at the University of Hartford, and we had the 9/11 Truth Group in Connecticut had Bolin scheduled for a Unitarian meeting house, and they also canceled because they got threats and people were putting things up on their website about, you know, Holocaust denier and Nazi, really ugly things. And then so I had to announce on the radio that the event was canceled, and I said it was because people were threatening them. And then the ADL went directly to the university president and asked to have, you know, they were complaining that I was directing people, and I directed people to Boleyn's website and mentioned his books since they weren't going to be able to hear him. And so the ADL went right to the university president and complained that I was recommending anti-Semitic books and websites. So, and I had to answer to that and talk to the executive committee, et cetera. So, and I'm still waiting to see what will happen with that. But I think I'm okay, but, you know, just that did happen. That's it.
Well, you know, if the ACLU was doing what the ACLU is supposed to be doing, we might have a recourse. But unfortunately, we're on our own. So I'm sure this isn't the last time we're going to be addressing this topic, but we need to be organizing a concerted effort of some sort that we as truthers can follow through with to help support the people that are under attack, as some of the good people on this teleconference have demonstrated that they are. So I'm afraid we're going to have to move on, but I want to thank all three of the guests that appeared today. Tony's not with us any longer, but Kevin and Jeremy, you're welcome to stay for the rest of it. But thank you so much for taking time to share with us your experiences, okay?
Thank you for having us.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you all.
Okay, I'm going to have to take it off of question mode because of Chris Milligan, and I think he's with us. Chris, are you here?
Hello. I'm here.
Yeah, hi, Chris. Yeah, good. Okay. All right, great. Well, we're gonna go ahead and let Ed introduce you. I'm really glad that you were able to make it here. But let me first ask Wayne. Wayne, since we're running so far over time, are you willing to postpone your issue to first on our item on our agenda for December if we need to do that?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, Wayne, nobody's muted right now.
Yeah, first of all, before I answer, I want to express my great appreciation for the wonderful call that you've had so far. It's been very informative and very enlightening. I will, in the interest of time, defer my till December. So thanks for everything that you do. It's a great over.
That's very gracious. Thank you, Wayne. So that'll give us a little more time to spend with Chris Milligan, and we're going to go ahead and proceed with our next item now. So Ed Jewett, who did the footwork on getting this important publisher to share some time with us right now, will give us the introduction. Go ahead, Ed.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Chris is a publisher and an author and a book editor and a musician, and has organized a number of conferences and symposia on deep state crimes, notably the assassination of Kennedy. His father was in the OSS, the military G2 intelligence wing, and later in the CIA, who rose to branch chief of intelligence analysis for East Asia. His own father's revelations led to Chris's publishing house, which first brought Anthony Sutton's underground classic on Skull and Bones to a wider audience, and then he embellished that with his own edited tome called Fleshing Out Skull and Bones, which I highly recommend. I also recommend Trine Day's book by Terry Melanson called Perfectibilists. They've grown to over 40 volumes in print, 15 on Dallas, 3 or 4 on 9/11, various assassinations, coup d'etat, trafficking, secret societies, and more. I consider them the meat and potatoes that cannot be found through mainstream search engines, and time well spent. Two recent additions to his library are Sean Stone's New World Order and Wendy Painting's tome on the history of Timothy McVeigh. It's an honor and a privilege to give you Chris Milligan.
Well, thank you very kindly, Ed.
One moment, Chris. Chris, hang on a second. We have to put this into lecture mode and then unmute you, so it'll be just a second here, okay? And Cheryl, let me need your help to unmute him.
Okay. Hello.
Yeah, there you are, Chris. Okay.
Well, let's get down to it here. Okay. And thank you, Ed, very much, and thank you all for having me on. And actually, we've got over 100 books now. And basically, I've been looking at this question since 1969 when my daddy took me aside. And 9/11 is just part of a continuing psychological warfare against the United States. The offending parties is a secret societal system. They do not give a fig about the United States. You basically have a system that is based in Europe and has a Chinese partner, okay? They just use the United States as a cat's paw to get the world into shape. Their end game is to rule the world through China. China stands up. China says, hey, we're China, 5,000 years of civilization, peace, 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 cur American war dog. I first heard about this from my father in 1969. He took me into a room with a professor from Vanderbilt, Dr. D.F. Fleming. The first words out of my father's mouth was, the Vietnam War is about drugs. There's these secret societies. I thought he was talking about the mafia. Then he said, and communism is all a sham. The secret societies are behind it all. It is all a big game. Okay. Now I want to drive that home really, really big. It is about control. Okay, and they are playing meme warfare. One thing they're looking to do is to it's been part of the meme warfare of the 9/11 all along is to push you guys into a corner to blame it all on the Israelis. Okay, one thing that you had in the 9/11, you had a bunch of Saudi intelligence agents. Okay, now if you're a Saudi intelligence agent, guess what? You have three Mossad agents on your tail because that's how the game works, okay? And then they can use that to push you guys over the edge to say that the Jews did it all, and then they just sweep you up in the anti-Semitic thing, okay? Because they, you know, it's... They can control you by, you know, who you think your enemies are. I mean, a lot of what these guys do is they want you to choose sides, okay? Because, see, once you can choose a side, they can manipulate you because you'll lie to protect your side and you'll believe lies about the other side because you don't like them, okay? And, you know, it's the main secret society system here, of course, is Skull and Bones, okay? Now, they're basically the visible society. Secret societies are built around families, okay? Skull and Bones is built around the Cabot family with a big, strong subset of the Whitney family. You have the visible head is there at New Haven at Skull and Bones. The invisible head is at Boston. And it has some very strong little brothers in New York and New Orleans, among other places, okay? And basically how this works is it's thesis, antithesis, synthesis, and if you can control both the thesis and the antithesis, then you have a good chance of coming out what the synthesis is going to be. How the secret societies work, okay, it's a pyramidal structure, okay? Up at the top of the pyramid, what have you got? Okay, you've got a co-opted council. Okay, what do I mean by a co-opted council? Okay, the council represents a bunch of different interests, and a bunch of these guys want to say, well, how can we know you aren't going to screw us over? So they have representatives of the other bodies there, okay? And then how the game is played. Okay, it's a pyramid, and everybody going down the pyramid, and remember, a pyramid has four sides, okay, not two sides, okay, and they play everybody against each other, and a lot of times, within these pyramids, you'll have, particular steps, and people will think, well, they're at the top of the pyramid. Well, they really aren't at the top of the pyramid. They're maybe at the top of the third step of the pyramid, okay, and it's how you control people, okay, and the secret societies will take whatever silly you know, hood that they can take to play. And yes, they have, you know, created the situation there in Israel. It has to do with the 33rd degree. And you see, Skull and Bones thinks that they're the Knights Templar. Okay, that's, if you look at what their logo is, you know, it's a symbol of death. They're known as the Brotherhood of Death. They perform a low level of sorcery, of death magic. They believe by killing people, they get power. And then our elections have been nothing but a psychological warfare on polarization. There hasn't been an honest election in most of our lives here, of everybody who's listening here, and the elections have been controlled by the computers. I mean, we live in the United States of America. We do not have a verifiable vote system. Whoever they want to put in, they will. Okay, the psychological warfare advantage of having a Trump presidency is immense. Okay, and again, another thing they're playing is generational warfare. They want to inoculate the kids in this bullshit. Okay, and you know, and you guys talking about university. I mean, that was one of the first things that Skull and Bones did. If you haven't read America's Secret Establishment by Anthony Sutton, please read it. You know, they took over the education system here as one of their first things, and then also they started the foundation systems, and it's through the foundations is how they control the universities and the you know, the media and the medical. I mean, you know, in the early 1900s, hey, let's give control of our education system and our medical system and our energy system to the Rockefellers. You know, I mean, and the Rockefellers are members of Skull and Bones. And then, I mean, why do the Rockefellers, you know, if you're a Rockefeller, you can do what you want, okay? Well, so why did the Rockefellers go to Arkansas and West Virginia and say, hey, you guys need some of our governance? Well, it's because they're mountainous states and because they represent two of the biggest black operations of the U.S. government. And basically, you see, these secret societies have captured, okay, they've captured industries, and it's basically through the drug trade. And if we all didn't know, the prohibitions have nothing to do with our health or community or our children. It has to do with keeping a black market, which allows them to sell plants for more than gold, which... You know, there's a great book by a professor out of Australia, Opium and the Political Economy, shows how, you know, all the banks, all the insurance, all the big pools of capital come from the drug trade. First drug trade was sugar, and, you know, as you can see, we're all still pretty damn well addicted to that. Okay? So, I'm a bit of a SOB, and my mama was a nice lady, but... you know, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a very sophisticated nuance that's COINTELPRO. I mean, if you guys haven't noticed the 9/11, I mean, they tried to divide it every time which way from Sunday, and I mean, it's fairly egregious a crime. TW 800 was a test case for 9/11, they followed a lot what happened there. But my 10 minutes is almost up, so if there's any questions or any comments, I kind of said my piece.
Thank you, Chris. Let's go into Q&A mode. We'll have to remember to... I think you're going to have to do it, Chirag. I can't get it. Unmute. It's Milligan, Robert. Okay, so while we're waiting, Chris, which book did you say was... Oh, I'm sorry, you can't... Yeah, you can answer now. You're unmuted. Which book was it you said it was about the drugs as a source of bank capital and sugar and so forth? And what was the name of that book?
It's by Professor Carl Trocki, T-R-O-C-K-I, and I believe it's Opium and the Political Economy. But
thank you. Do you publish that book?
No, it's I believe it's Rutledge does it. And no, there's a lot of books that I don't publish that I recommend. Another one's Gold Warriors.
Yeah, I got that one. Okay, so if you want to ask a question, it's star 6 to get in the queue to make a comment or ask a question of our guest, Chris Milligan. Okay.
Hi, this is Kat. Can you hear me okay?
You betcha, Kat.
Yeah, hi, Chris. In your list of people who are kind of running this show at that high level, you didn't mention Rothschild, and so I'm wondering if they are there. And also, of those people, be it Skull and Bones or whatever, what percentage would you say are Zionists in addition to the Rothschilds?
You know, at some point in time, it's some of them believe and some of them don't believe. Most of them are just very pragmatic, and they go for the gold and the girls, okay? Yes, the Rothschilds are part of the whole thing. And, you know, they used Zionism, and, you know, you can look at the Balfour decision and you know, a lot of that stuff. And you look at the, you know, who built the Supreme Court building there in Jerusalem and all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, there's a quote-unquote an occult aspect to this whole rigmarole.
Okay. Anybody else have a question or a comment? I don't see any other questions or comments. Is that it?
Okay, no problem.
Well, wait a minute, Chris. Before you go, I mean, let people know a little bit more about your publishing firm and how they can access it, and you know, the website and so forth.
Well, it's trineday.com, and they basically open it up, but it has the things of the books, and we're basically suppressed books. Books that New York wouldn't publish. A lot of them are, you know, about drugs or about the assassination of JFK, which was, again, was a mass ritual similar to 9/11. You know, it's part of the operation.
Oh, yeah, there's a few more people that just got on the queue to ask questions. So if you have a few more minutes, we'll go to the next questioner.
Yes, this is Nita Renfrew. Could you say something about the occult aspect, and could you recommend a book or books about that and the connection with what you were talking about?
Well, I get into it somewhat in fleshing out Skull and Bones. I get in, and there's also a book called Perfectibilist, which talks about the Illuminati. And the occult aspects are really things that people in power use to affect the population through the subconscious. And we're basically dealing with what I call the priests and the pirates. You basically had the priest who developed a system because they found out if they blew smoke out of a hole, the people would bring them food, they'd bring them their daughters. So they developed a philosophy that used trickery to get what they want. Then you have the pirates. The pirates, basically, if you were a sea-based civilization, your knowledge base over the landlubbers was quite a bit. So you would, again, use that knowledge base to get what you wanted from the people on the land. Okay, and so we basically have, within Skull and Bones, we have the priests, the pirates, and they've turned into psychopaths. So,
what's the name of that book?
Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. Another one is called Perfectibilis. And then there's one, it's by Daniels, and it's called The Scarlet. Hang on. Scarlet and the Beast. Okay, there's a lot of what it documents is that there's a bit of a quote unquote war between, for want of a better terms, British Freemasonry and French Freemasonry, and you can see where it boils down into. See, television is a technological means of mind control, okay, especially in the United States. United States is NTSCS system. It runs at 60 cycles per second. You read any book about hypnosis, it'll tell you that that 60 cycle flicker puts you into a trance, okay? Well, a British developed a thing called PAL, okay, which runs at 55, and then there was another system called CCAM, okay, which the French developed, which then also the communist world used. And so, like I say, it's when you get farther up the pyramid, there's more revealed to you, and but then there's also more things that are used to control you within your little thing, so that, because a lot of what goes on is, you know, like Shakespeare said, it's a play, and we want to get, you know, okay, you're a lefty. Okay, it's time for you to stand up and make noise. Okay, you're on the right. It's time for you to stand up and make noise. Okay, you're, you know, whatever. It's time for you to stand. I mean, you know, it's like when I first, you know, my daddy told me this stuff, and I told some people, and I says, they said, I'm a conspiracy theorist. And I says, well, what's that? So I went into every store I could find and said, take me to your conspiracy section. And all of them had at least one book. You know, and these are screeds, okay? And you know, because I can find you a book that blames it all on the Jews. I can find you a book that blames it all on the Catholics. I can find a book that blames it all on the, you know, the Jesuits. I can find you a book that blames it all on the Masons, Illuminati, you know, whatever, okay? So it's a very nuanced thing that we're dealing with. And basically, these people are very pragmatic, okay? And it's about control. And it's about, you know, they use a lot of intelligence protocols, and intelligence protocol is basically whatever lie works to get that guy to do what you want to do, whatever button you want to push him in. And the other thing about secret societies is, you know, when you join Skull and Bones, they've watched you for at the very least 3 years, okay? And they know what you're going to do. And it's not like they choose every evil person. I mean, they choose a bunch of good people, too, because they can use them, okay? Because they'll only tell them so much, and it's, you know, it's, there's a standard thing in secret societies. Okay, we want you to spit on the Bible, okay? And it gets to the point where people spit on the Bible not because they have some emotional response to it, because their daddy tells them to, because if you spit on the Bible, you're going to go play with the people over there, okay? So it's a very pragmatic system of control, okay? So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. We'll go to the next commenter, Pablo.
Yeah, is Pablo, you can hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This is not a question, it's an opinion. I first started figuring this stuff out back in 65, been organizing for 50 plus years, and it's my firm belief, and I've had it for half a century, that all of which you described, except for one mention, are symptoms or secondary aspects of the basic problem, which is not secret societies and not the deep state, it's capitalism, the production for profit of a tiny minority who own the means of production, production done by millions of people in the United States and all over the world. That's what drives the secret societies. That's what drives the, has members within anything you might want to call deep state. But the problem is capitalism. The problem is not the secret societies.
Well, again, capitalism is an ism, okay? And, you know, we don't live in capitalism, okay? I mean, these capitalism use the state to support themselves. It's a monopolist state. Again, these are a bunch of just intellectual stuff that they use. Again, they're just very pragmatic, okay? And they're gonna try and get you in to little pigeonholes, which will allow them to then to call on you on cue on their game. And the thing is to not play their game, is to create, the hippies, okay, the baby boomers were not supposed to come together as a generation. We were supposed to be a completely pieced out, drugged out generation, okay? But we did come together. We came together as hippies, okay? And a lot of good things came out of the hippies, a personal computer, the internet. Those are the tools that we're using to fight this corruption, because that's all it is. It's just corruption. It's people lying, cheating, and stealing. Okay, and I mean, these people will use communism. They'll use whatever thing it is. It doesn't matter. Okay, and look at the speech that President Kennedy made about secrecy. There's a lot of people say, oh, it's just about communism. There's more in there about that. Okay, mm-hmm. This secret society system, started way before there was ever a concept of quote-unquote capitalism. I mean, they don't want capitalism. They want feudalism. They want to be the masters, and we're the blankety-blank slaves, okay? It's way beyond capitalism. Excuse my
okay.
Verb.
Thanks. Let's
you
go
bet.
To the next comment. Adam Jewett?
Hi. Would you recommend the Lavenda Trilogy, speaking of occult?
Oh, yes. The Lavenda Trilogy, that was one of the first books that got thrown to me when people found that I was going to be publishing these books that had been, circling New York. Lavenda, that's a very good book to help understand the psychological warfare. Psychological warfare comes from the German term meaning worldview warfare, okay? In other words, I want you to think a particular worldview. Okay, I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky in that I had my daddy tell me some stuff that I didn't understand many years ago. And so I've had years and years to be able to read lots of books and to look at it. People now, we are, and you have to make a change. You have to make a change on your beliefs, on what your understandings of how the world works. And people now are making that change within a short period of time. And let me tell you, this change doesn't happen easy. It doesn't happen, you have to go down some wrong alleys. You have to be wrong. You have to, because it is very nuanced. The psychological warfare is very thick, okay? It's been going on for generations. Okay, and the lies that we've been told, we can't accept. It's hard for us to accept. It's hard for us to accept that somebody else would actually do that. Okay, I mean, 9/11 is classic mind control. I mean, what did you happen there? What did we see that whole day there? Okay, we saw a plane going into a building, right? We've all been on airplanes, okay? You know, you've got a couple hundred people, and you may not know the person next to you, but you've got a camaraderie there, okay? And we've all been in office buildings, and we got to go to work, right? And so that's tragedy. That's trauma, okay? What does trauma do? Trauma puts you into shock, okay? And so what happens here? They smash the archetype, and they bring it back up a different way. Before 2011, they kept up the facade that, we don't kill people. Well, now we know that our president pulls out a drawer and he's got a list of Americans there he's going to kill. And we're going to kill these people. So we're part of it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. And the depth of knowledge that the intelligence operations have and the depth of control is a man. I mean, just watch what they do. Watch what they did this last election. I mean, wasn't that, I've been reading the tea leaves for a long time. It was going to be Bush versus Clinton, and Clinton had been set up to lose. Well, these guys have been doing polling. They could see that Trump is very much like Eisenhower, okay? In 1952, the Skull and Bones guy was Bob Taft. He was boring. He wasn't going to win. Their polling showed that Eisenhower was going to win. Prescott Bush went to Schaaf headquarters and said, "Hey, Ike, what are you, a Republican or Democrat? We want to know." Ike said, "I'm a Republican." Okay. And, you know, I mean, they put in Dick Nixon as his acting vice president. He was run by Prescott Bush. Prescott Bush was, you know, was Ike's favorite golfing partner. The powers that be don't mind having Trump and being president. Lord have mercy.
Okay, you know. Let's go to the next comment. Thanks, Ed.
Yes, this is James Hufford, and I'd just like to ask Chris what his take is on Pizzagate. Does he think that's connected to the structure he described?
There's something there. There's a bunch of hooey, though, too. Okay, I've been talking with Nick Bryan about it a bunch. Podesta, I mean, look at Podesta's art collection. I mean, you guys got art collections like that, you know? And then you have where they'll use that to pay off the artist and keep them in their little clique type thing. But there's a bunch of hooey in there, too, that's basically directed at people's emotions and prejudices, okay? But, yes, is there a pedophile underground, and is there honey traps, and is there blackmail that is used? Absolutely, okay? But there's a lot of hooey in what is there. Okay, and Trump is up to his eyeballs with Epstein and underage girls. And if people don't think that Trump, there's no pictures on Trump being blackmailed, you know, I got a bridge in Brooklyn, please.
Okay. All right, well, I think that wraps up our questioning. That's all, everybody. Is anybody not able to get on the question that wants to ask a question? Okay, good. All right, so thank you, Chris, for sharing time with us and letting us know about Tron Day and how we can get a hold of your incredible collection of published works. And people can, you know, we'll hopefully put that in the minutes for the reference of all of our other members.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And it's time now for announcements. So I guess we'll just take it. Anybody with a announcement, just go ahead and let us know what it is.
Yeah, this is Wayne.
Could you Wayne, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, first of all, Wayne,
and Barbara.
Yeah. Okay. What? So I just wanted to let people know that the presentation I was going to present, you can find a mm-hmm. copy of it by going to our website, hopeoutloud.org/Pentagon. It's the top one. Where I go through the location of the debris from the light poles 1 and 2 that there were instrumental in the Lloyd England taxicab story at the Pentagon. So you can kind of go through that. I'll be talking about it next week. And I'm looking forward mm-hmm. to some questions.
Next month.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Over.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Wayne. And Barbara?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a yes?
Yes. Nobody's muted right now, Barb.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, Ken, you forgot another three times in a row to open up the questions at the end. It's kind of
no, I did it at the last one. I just got done doing it, Barbara.
Yeah, but I spoke up and I couldn't be heard, I guess. I just can't get
I'm so sorry. Well, I guess I don't know why that was. Maybe you had it on your own mute, but you want to ask Chris a question?
No,
Chris, are you still here?
No, I didn't. Is Chris still on the call?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, you are,
go
Chris.
Ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, ask me a question, Barbara.
I have a question for Chris and then my announcement that's part of the schedule tonight, the agenda. Chris, could you just tell us the titles of your 9/11 books and what's your criteria for your next 9/11 book, or what are you looking for?
I'm looking for a good manuscript. We've got most dangerous book in the world, 9/11 is Mass Ritual. Okay, then we've got... 9/11 mystery plane.
Oh yes, uh-huh.
Okay, and then we just came out with Black 9/11, the second edition. Okay.
Right, those are by Frank Gaffney.
Right. And then there's one more, Disconnecting the Dots.
Oh, yeah, by Kevin. That's a good one.
Which is, is very good and very hard to assail. And, you know, of course I can't get that guy, you know, any radio or anything like that. And
yeah, it's very technical, but it's very important. Yeah.
Right.
So you basically got four books so far on 9/11.
Yes. And then, yeah.
Okay. Great. Yeah, well, we'll all be getting you our manuscripts. You'll be overwhelmed.
You know, I mean, it is... I'm just amazed, you know, that you know. Well, the media's control is just pretty darn amazing. I mean, we all know are aware of it. I'll shut up.
Okay. Well, I've got three quick announcements. Can I go ahead with that?
Okay. Yeah. Go with them, Bob.
Okay. Good. All right. The first is, this is really important for everybody. As you know, we're now in a lame duck session of Congress, and as you know, miraculously, JASTA was passed by an almost unanimous override of President Obama's veto. JASTA, the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, it's now law, but there is a huge push by the Saudis and the deep state, all of the establishment in Washington and the military intelligence government community wants to either overturn JASTA or get an amendment passed in the lame duck session before the next administration comes in, because they're still not sure what Trump would do or not do. And they want to either override it or they want to have an amendment that would water it down so much it might as well be overridden. So there is an action item, and Les Jamison, I was... Can I still be heard? There's screeching on the phone.
Yeah.
Can I still be heard?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, okay. I was just on email on the phone with Les Jamison, who, with my input, is about to put out what he calls an action alert. And, you know, I know people have had some questions about Les, but he's going to put out an action alert. And what I'm asking to his group, and what I'm asking is that everybody do this and put out action alerts. It's extremely important for everyone to get in touch with both of their senators. This is about the Senate now, okay? It's easier to, in order to block any amendment or attempt to overturn JASTA by a new bill in the lame duck session, which ends January 19th or whatever it is, before the new administration comes in, all you need is a single senator to do a filibuster or organize a filibuster. The main person to contact is the office of Senator Rand Paul. He's our best bet, but the others are Ron Wyden, Chris Gillibrand, and Senator Schumer, who is really the lead, he and Rand Paul, and also, believe it or not, the Republican Senator Cornyn, who was the main Republican counterpart for Schumer to get JASTA through originally on 100-0 unanimous vote in the Senate before the later override vote that was 90 to override, 2 abstain, and 1 against. So it's really important for everybody to get in touch with those 5 senators as well as your 2 senators as soon as you can. Just get their numbers and call. Put it out to your list to get their numbers and call. And every one of us needs to do a special, separate email action alert to our list, because your 2 senators are going to be different depending upon the state. So that's probably
Barbara, do you want to put that together in a written summary and send it to Craig so he can cut and paste it into the minutes?
Yeah, the minutes take a while to come out. I don't know how long they'll be out, but this is urgent.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, yes, I'll be happy to do this, but this is something that we all need to do immediately. And you need to do it.
Send something to the 9/11 telecon listserv, okay?
I will do that to the telecon listserv along with the dates that the House and that the Senate and the House are in session. They're not in session all day between now and then.
Okay.
So I will do that, okay? The legal update, I'm actually on the agenda to give you a short legal update from the New York City Conference. I really don't have one yet because it's a long process and it's in process. The bottom line is somebody put out that I had said, which I never did because it isn't a fact and I never said it, that we do have an office in New York already for the 9/11 Lawyers Committee. That is not true. We're looking for funding. So we're in funding mode. I know we're all, you know, none of us are rich, but we're in funding mode, and the group is called the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. And if you just Google that, you would go to the website and you could donate, put that out to your list. That would be great. So anyway, we're in fundraising mode for an office in Manhattan. Okay, that's where we are with it. And there was one, there's one other announcement. And that is, I have just, within about an hour, I'm going to send everybody to the 911 telecon list the link to a new YouTube interview with an incredible whistleblower by the name of Frank Gregory Ford. Frank Gregory Ford is, if I were to choose one whistleblower for the Iraq War, for WMD, for torture, and for 9/11 right now, it would be Frank Gregory Ford. It's only about 28 minutes. I highly recommend everybody watch it and send it widely to your list. It'll blow your mind. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Barbara. Okay, any other announcements before we close?
Yes. Hello?
Yeah, who's this?
This is Ned Delaney.
Yeah, okay, go ahead, Ned.
Yeah,
Ned Delaney.
I wanted to get on and make a comment on reference to the last speaker, and I was nimble fingers and could get on. It's referencing indoctrination. I've already mentioned Mitch Daniels at Purdue. Recently, the board has set up what they call an honors college. It's a cloistered group. It's a separate building in the middle of the university. The students that go into this program are vetted. They come from, used to be, each individual college had its own honors school or honors college. Now they've coordinated it all into this one building. The students that come into this facility are housed there. They eat there. It's a closed building. It's secure. You just can't walk into the thing. Each student has their own counselor. They're monitored. Their progress is monitored through the entire program. It appears to be a feeder into the system. And before we're talking about mind control, I know somebody that's intimately involved in the program. He would argue that it's not that, but it certainly appears, considering the people that are sponsoring the program, setting the thing up, that it's a classic system for putting people in place that have connections through different facilities to manipulate and present and promote a particular program and agenda. So I just want to throw that out.
Where is this? I missed Honors College. Where? And what about Mitch Daniels? What's the connection?
He's running the university.
Yeah, what university?
Purdue University.
What university?
Purdue University.
Purdue. Can't hear. Okay, Purdue. And what's the link to Mitch Daniels?
Purdue, Mitch Daniels is the president of the university. He's the one that wanted to censor Howard Zinn, and you know, there's a history of manipulation.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
I couldn't hear
great.
Purdue
thank you. Thank you for that, Ed. Okay, any other announcements before we close? Okay, then that brings us to a close for this edition of our teleconference. We'll see you all the last Wednesday in December, which I think is the 28th or the 30th or something like that. And Wayne will be there, and so will the rest of us, hopefully. Have a good holiday, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.